Joseph is going to be a little late, so he'll probably come in the middle of your presentation, sir. What I'd like to do is call the Special Committee on Procurement and Ethics to order, please, for the audience, because I see a lot of new faces down there. This is the fifth or sixth meeting of this committee. We've had several here in Anchorage. We went up to Fairbanks last week and had the University of Alaska testify. We're primarily looking at how the state and its agencies and its independent agencies or pseudo-independent agencies conduct procurement, contracting, leasing in the state of Alaska and how they deal with the public. This committee was given the mandate by the Senate to look over the procurement code, which we discovered was written in territorial days in the late 1950s and hasn't had any updates or revisions since that time. So we're looking at those kinds of things. We have circled in on it. Representative Porchot, please join us at the table, sir, if you would like. We have zeroed in on the model procurement code that was developed by the American Bar Association through a grant from the Department of Justice in 1977-78. This problem of procurement was a problem in many of the states, and so the Justice Department did a public service for the states in asking the ABA, the American Bar Association, to work up a model procurement code. The last state to pass it is Arizona. Their purchasing officer will be here working with us next week. For several days, he's taken a leave of absence from the state of Arizona with their permission to come up and tell us some of the things they found in Arizona that works, that doesn't work. They've been working on the code now for a year. They totally committed to the model procurement code in Arizona without one additional dollar in the general fund being used to change over their entire system. But that's because the Department of Administration and the purchasing director in Arizona was totally committed to this. So they work extra hours on their own time, and the Department of Law there really helped them. And so they committed to it, and they did it without an expense to the public. I don't know if we'll be that lucky here. I do know that our Department of Law has been fabulous. For those of you in the public, the Department of Law has been so supportive of this issue and the product that we're producing that it's really been gratifying to me and the members of the committee who even aren't here today to have that assistance from the Department of Law. They've been fabulous. All of the expenses for this committee are being handled by the Senate Finance Committee. It's all in-house. We are keeping track of it. If we're lucky enough to get payback from the legislature in January, fine. If not, we have a little pool of money there that we're paying for. We've hired no outside consultants. We're doing this all with legislative staff. Lynn Hickerson is the attorney for Senator Halperin and myself on the Senate side, and she has taken this on as a special project. And then with the help of Legislative Affairs and the Department of Law, it's being handled without additional expense. Senator DeVries, do you have any comments? Okay. With that, and knowing Senator Josephson will be a little late, but we'll be here, I'll turn it over to the Executive Director, Bob Heath, of the Alaska Power Authority, and let you give your presentation, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our presentation is not a very elaborate one. We're referring to a large collection of materials. We are, I characterize it as a second-tier state agency. And as such, we jump to some hoops that others don't necessarily do. Our procedures are modeled, not modeled, they are the standard ones put out by the Department of Administration. We go from our own agency, requesting an authority to negotiate, for instance, from our own agency, through Department of Commerce, through Department of Administration, back to us. It's a bit on the clumsy side. The timing can vary anywhere from 4 to 66 days just to get the authority, God forbid, really. There are those problems. The Power Authority has been perceived to have contracting problems under the fair state. When I first came on board there, I asked Price Waterhouse to come in and look at our contracts to see if there's anything there. They did so. And they looked at their random sample of contracts to assist with the Power Authority. And they came back with an answer that said, in essence, don't have a good central filing system like their own field might have, the documents included in the package. The central files we're working on, we will have central files. In other words, the tracking system that is difficult for an auditor to come through and track. We go through DOA, though legally we're not required to. We use their procedures, even though statutorily the APA is not subject to those sections. We feel that's a better way because they are the professionals and they're looking through contract documents. We have some questions that we think this committee might think about addressing. Much what the answers are. DOA has a long list of bidders, maybe as many as 300 bidders on the bidders list. I don't know how you get on a bidders list, but it's a fairly simple process, and the list is not really updated. I urge those people who aren't interested, and it is not as specific as we'd like. In other words, if you're procuring something, should be very specific, and there should be a bidders list that does these things specifically. It doesn't matter if a contractor is on a dozen bidders lists or a dozen different types of work. It just gets clumsy to send out 300 bids. In fact, we normally send out a letter saying, are you interested? And they get no answer or a negative answer. We don't send out a 1,500-page document. So some work could be done in that area. We also have a difficulty in the sense that we do what are called reconnaissance studies. It's a quick look-see at a project and with one contractor. Then the question becomes, you go out and find a new contractor to do the feasibility study. When the logical person to do that is the guy who did the reconnaissance study, that's a difficult problem. I don't have a good answer for that. So where you go in that situation. In most cases, we go back out and do it. Some cases we send a contract, but it is a difficult problem. I have recently asked the Department of Law, we'll be going out for a bid for Bradley Lake construction this spring. I've asked the Department of Law to develop the strongest possible Alaska hire language for that contract. We feel we can legally do. My questions are. The question is, how far can you go by contract as opposed to statute? I don't know the answer to this question. I've also asked for the strongest possible minority hire provisions in that contract. We will in all probability find some new ground. I have with me Tom Andreola, our contracting officer, and the committee has very specific questions or wishes to go deeper into this mass information we're trying to get.
A couple of questions, Bob, and either you or Tom. Is it Tom?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, hi, Tom. What is your percentage of professional service contracts versus going out to bid? How many do you go out with an RFP, and how many do you just go out and go to bid?
The law is very explicit in that question. Anything over $25,000, we have to go out for bid. Anything $5,000 can go just to the level of the commissioner, so we solicit informally. If the Transmittal 76 addresses that very explicitly on how we do it. Now your question is the percentage of ours, I would say under $5,000, $5,000 or under is very minimal. I think in this neighborhood, possibly 5% of our efforts. Over $25,000, I would say, in our reconnaissance and feasibility studies, construction management, consultants such as risk management, or engineer consultants, all of those are going to range higher than the $25,000, so we have to go out by the direction for advertised procurement and formal solicitation.
How many of your contracts are sole source?
It's hard to say, pick a number. Generally, a sole source procurement would come after we've had experience with a contract, and it would be the best advantage to the state to go sole source. For instance, supposing we have a consultant on board who has got the expertise in dam evaluation, and we use him on an as-needed basis. Know that the credentials that he has, the reason we selected him to start with was advertised. now by direction, if we're going to amend an existing contract, we have to tell you it's sole source. We don't go back out on the street. So to amend that contract, we must tell you it's a sole source procurement, and we're going to use that same person. So you asked me how many? There's no way of saying. We have excess of 200 contracts ongoing, whether it's a RSA, which is dealing with another state agency, whether it's a professional services contract, or whether it's a procurement of some sort. But if you want numbers, we'd have to go back to our records and say X number was sole source. The numbers itself is not very high.
Is it a policy decision? Is it kind of standard operating practice of the APA? If you have a good consultant on a contract for a preliminary study or whatever, that you will sole source the amendment to that contract and continue on with that person? Is that kind of a standard policy?
No, ma'am. Not in reconnaissance study. When you go to cut reconnaissance, the feasibility study next in line with the design contract. Normally, we will not use the same contractor that does a feasibility study to go into design. There may be some cases, really, where that would be our best contractor. But again, looking at the flow pattern, it's not an APA decision, because the ATN has to flow before we can even talk to the contractor. The same one that we had on as the evaluator, and in order to go sole source, we have to get the approval through the system.
Well, I think you will find that if you are waiting for the system to get your ATN back to you, you are one of the few agencies that are doing it. And I know, having done studies in the Common Sense Bureau Act in 1981, the Department of Commerce had, at that point in time, having reviewed personally thousands of state contracts, the very best compliance with the state administrative code and fiscal procedures act dealing with contracts. So I know the Department of Commerce was very good back then. But if you folks are honestly following all those policies and procedures and waiting patiently for your ATN to get back to you prior to you going out and doing your contract, you're the only folks that are doing it.
Yes, ma'am. However, since our initial audit by the legislative auditors, we know absolutely nothing about contracting. We're going by the numbers. That was one of the areas they said you did things that you shouldn't do. I guarantee you that it's not happening today. Okay? And this is one of the areas that is very frustrating, because it takes anywhere from 6 days to 66 days to get a piece of paper out of the system when it goes down for approval. And that's what that flow chart shows you, attachment number 2 there that I handed out to you.
How does the APA determine who's a good consultant? How do you know if the product given to you is what you wanted or is accurate?
Well, basically, we're relying on the professionalism of the people in APA. In a reconnaissance study or a feasibility study, number one, before we make the selection, we look at credentials. And that's basically done on an evaluation of all the proposals that come in, and it's done by committee selection. It's not done by a person. So you're looking at credentials prepared, the resume afforded the review committee. The selection is made, and again, it goes before the board of directors, tell them how we made the selection. Now, as far as the end result of the product, every product we have, every project is chaired is managed by a project manager who is a professional in the field, which means that our people do have the credentials to be an environmentalist or whatever specialty he's in. And so the results of the report are analyzed, and we have the option to question the contractor, what does that mean? Because generally we get a draft report and before the final report is submitted. So I'm saying we're relying on the professionalism of the people involved.
I'm sure if I might add, you rely on names and reputations, of course. You also rely on the bidders list provided by the Department of Administration. And that doesn't always work either. Even though we're suing one contractor, a very reputable contractor, for $20 million. So, no easy answer to that. other part of the problem is when we start the construction management contract for Bradley and process, is that how many folks can we bring in-house? So they work for the state of Alaska and have no other agencies. And the answer was, perhaps best said, I don't think I could talk to the Department of Administration about completion bonuses and the other things that people dedicate 3 or 4 years to a project normally get paid.
Well, let me ask you something. And Representative Yalberry, if you'd like to sit at the table, sir, and ask questions, you are most welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll leave a few minutes now, please.
Okay. The Department of Transportation, I know, are prepared to give a performance bonus to the early completion of Diamond Boulevard. And I need to call them and ask them exactly what that mechanic is, how they do that. But why can't you do something along that line? Yeah. If they're doing it.
The performance bonus goes to a contractor. I was talking about hiring an employee.
Oh, you're hiring. Oh.
I'm talking about saying to a person, will you work for me the next 3 years while we build this project? And the answer is, it's a true understanding. You can't afford the people. Because the contractor pays them more. And you do talk about the completion bonuses for individuals. I don't like the answer because I not only pay the full salary of that person, I also pay a markup. It is a statewide problem. Dozens of examples of you cannot attract the talent you need because the other cost that salary you need.
I think that in the past, people have viewed that as increasing the state employment roles, and they're always fearful that when the position of project is over, that position, you know, doesn't continue on for the next 3 years, and somebody decides, oh, well, you know, that project's been completed for 3 years. And I know on local government anyway, that was one of the questions we wrestled with in the office. But for some reason in the public, it's perceived that once you have that person, when the project's done, you're not going to say goodbye to it. You're going to find something else, and then the employment roles keep growing larger.
Senator, that is the tendency of officer.
Yeah.
It's the tendency in the legislative branch, too. Once we get a good staffer, we don't want to lose them. We'll figure out, you know, if our positions change, we'll figure out how to keep that person on the hook. So we are, but we certainly can't throw rocks over here, because we do the same thing.
Well, I'm not figured out an answer. I've been thinking about it for the last 3 years of how you can. Treasury is a prime example. The criminal fund is another example. We're paying people $67,000 a year for their worth of work on it, not external to manage a $6 billion fund. We end up doing pay contractors that order the minutes.
Commissioner, I'm sorry, I don't have the phone yet. Do you open all your bids to public?
All the advertised procurements are open to public, yes.
Which procurements are not open to public?
Well, the professional services contracts and our procurements aren't necessarily open to public because they tell you that it's not a hard dollar bid. In the trade, a hard dollar bid, the dollar determines whether it's awarded to that contractor or not. In professional services, you do an evaluation of the bidders, of all the bids. The documents themselves, once the due date is up, are available to the public to look at. But then those professional services contracts are negotiated. Therefore, the selected contractor is brought in and negotiated and awarded to that contractor. You don't necessarily have to be the low bidder. Where you're used to seeing public advertised on a hard dollar contract, normally in procurements of commodity or construction, you will open them in public and post the results of the bid opening. However, they're still not the successful bidder, the fact that he's the low bid. He has to be responsible to the proposal. So that takes time to evaluate them. So they are open to public when they are invitation to bids. Professional services, normally not.
How long have you been with the APA?
I've been with them 4 years now.
But what's your background? You have a lot of background in procurement, don't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Because you talk the language like the other procurement professionals do. What's your background?
Well, prior to APA, I was the contracting officer for the Small Business Administration here in the state of Alaska.
So with the federal government?
Yes, ma'am. And then prior to that, I was with the Defense Contracts Administration for quite a while.
Okay. What we found in this committee of those contracting officers with federal government experience really make the agency toe the line to the what we call in AT&T policies and procedures, which aren't really regulations, but the federal contracting officers treat them as such. The non-federal, or the people that have non-federal experience, they're more lax. So I congratulate you. You sound like you're keeping them online.
Well, ma'am, I don't think I'm keeping them online. I think it's a very burdensome way of doing business. What the procedures we have to go through. We've got an executive director who is competent, capable.
That's not always the case.
No, wait a minute. But he doesn't sign an ATN. He initials an ATN. And that to me is convenient. When I joined the force, you know, I was a contracting officer with unlimited authority in committing the federal government. Today, I don't sign one single paper, so I'm not responsible for anything, which I'm ready to take responsibility, and so is the executive director. We do have a lot of slack and waste time and procedures, but we can't change it.
Listen, what we might want to do when the Arizona gentleman is here next week is bring like Barbara Peters down from the university, get this gentleman and a couple of our other professional contracting folks that are in the alphabet through the agency. Lois Cook would have been good at commerce, but she's gone now. Maybe Jean Brown would be. Jones Brown. And see what the professionals in the field think can be done to streamline this thing and get them together next week at a seminar if they're bosses, and we'll pay the travel for them. And get these folks together, because whatever we do is either going to make their life easier or harder. And whatever we do, these folks are going to have to administer. So we should probably bring them in and let them talk to Wayne Casper. Okay, would you be allow him to come in? Okay. Well, we'll coordinate that. Any other questions for Mr. Heath? All right. I have no questions. You might want to hang around, though, and see if your questions generally come up from members of the public. Okay?
Yeah,
Representative Persho, do you have any questions, or Representative Dean Alberry? Okay. All right, we'll open it to the public. And Marcia from the Department of Administration, do you have any comments? Okay. And Marcia, you are always welcome to sit with us at the table also. We'll open it to public hearing now. Elizabeth, there's a list someplace, but I don't have it. It says Jan. Several people have signed up on the sign-up sheet in the lobby area. Take it. Is there an architect or an engineer here today? Norma Chemilowski, you want to come on up?
I do have a copy of the follow-up.
Okay, great. Oh, good, because we have to put it in everybody's packet. Even though we
I've
don't
got
have
a couple
more,
others.
Oh, good, because even though we don't have everybody here, they do get their packets and they do read and they are interested and involved. So.
Well, good morning. First of all, my name is Norma Chmielowski, and I'm president of Mega Incorporated. And I'm here today to share with you some information on how frustrating it can be for small business to attempt to contract with the state. Now, while the examples that I'll be sharing with you today are in no way of the same magnitude as the recent Fairbanks office lease fiasco, nonetheless, they're very real problems, and they should be considered by your committee during your review of the contracting procedures for the state. To give you just a little bit of background on who I am and where I'm coming from, a little over 1 year ago, myself and four other individuals formed Mega Incorporated. We felt that with our collective professional background, we could build a successful and viable business in two areas, training, doing different workshops in different categories, and business and management consulting. After we formed our business, one of the areas that we looked at was contract bidding for projects with the various governments, both local, state, and federal. We felt that this would do two things for our company. Number one, it would provide us with a source of income while we were building our business. At the same time, provide us with the proper credibility we needed as a viable business. Since we had all worked for either state, local, or federal governments, we had a lot of familiarity with internal operations. Number two, We felt it would, over a period of time, utilize all of our talents in providing a service to those agencies we were bidding with, and because a good track record is so important, we felt that we could give various agencies we bid with a quality product. Now, one of the first problems that arises with any new business when bidding with a project is that one of the evaluation criteria is always the experience factor. As individuals, we had all kinds of personal references who would gladly and willingly attest to our expertise. However, since we had just formed our company, we had no corporate references. Now, with no corporate references, you're marked down, and it's difficult to win a bid. And without winning a bid, it's difficult, if not impossible, to gain a corporate reference. So it's really a vicious circle, a catch-22 situation. And this leads me to my first recommendation for your committee. And that is, by evaluation criteria, credibility should be given to individual references as well as corporate references. That way, new businesses will at least have an opportunity to be successful and not be disqualified just because they're new. I am going to cover some very specific examples of problems that we have encountered while dealing with various state entities. The first example is a competitive RFP that we bid on over a year ago. The RFP was issued by the Department of Administration to develop and implement a geographic cost of living differential study for the state of Alaska. We submitted our bid for the project in September of last year, and we were subsequently called on to make a trip to Juneau for a final presentation. The state, through the RFP, had indicated that we had been selected to give an oral presentation. Two of our people traveled to Juneau to make the presentation. When we did not receive the award, we requested a copy of the winning proposal and a copy of the evaluator's scores on the evaluation criteria. Upon receipt, we realized that we had never been in the running. There were only three bidders, and apparently all three firms were asked to make the trip for a final presentation in order to be equitable. And my reason for bringing up this particular example is that we spent over $2,000 unnecessarily in making that trip to Juneau. The DOA should never have even asked our company to make the trip.